Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokane7.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time law professor at Gonzaga University School of Law.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, that show that loves it when the house lights dim, whether those lights belong in a theater or in our own living rooms. This week, we're going to discuss three movies, two of which are playing in area theaters, and one that is a Netflix special. The first is Nope, the latest release from Get Out and Us director Jordan Peele. Then we'll head to Spain to watch the faux making of a movie, Official Competition. And finally, we'll check out the Netflix action flick, The Gray Man. Let's begin this week's show by exploring a world that seems more threatening than ever. And no, I'm not talking about the world that we see represented in the daily headlines. I'm referring to the world as defined by Jordan Peele, once half of the comedy team Key and Peele, and since 2017, the writer-director of suspense horror films such as Get Out, Us, and most recently, Nope. Set in rural California in the dusty hills outside Los Angeles, where numerous Westerns used to be filmed, Nope focuses on a brother-sister team played by Daniel Kaluuya and Kiki Palmer. After the pair are forced to take over their father's horse ranch business, they begin experiencing strange occurrences, power outages, and unusual cloud formations, not to mention weird sounds and odd objects falling from the sky. All of this adds to the movie's overall spooky feel. Adding to the tone, Peele includes a backstory of a character played by Steven Yeun, whose past history involves a rabid chimp terrorizing a TV set. And let's not forget the half dozen or more red herrings, both plot and visual, that Peele gives us. He makes particularly good use of some of those colorful roadside balloon bobbers typically found at used car lots. If you've seen any of the advanced trailers for Nope, you probably already know too much. To say anything more would provide too many spoilers, except to say that Peele has become the new M. Night Shyamalan, the one who blends his serious intent with a well-defined sense of humor.
I'm glad you brought up M. Night, because if you didn't, I was going to. There are long passages in Nope where I was thinking of Shyamalan's movie Signs. In fact, there are times where this almost feels like a cover version of Signs. There are so many visual cues and even kind of scare tactics that he seems to be kind of lifting directly from that earlier movie. And I thought, oh no, are we in for trouble? Because Signs has such a spectacular first two thirds, and then it really kind of loses its way at the end. And I felt that way about Peele's last movie, Us, which I thought was moving along at a nice clip and had all of these beautiful visual signposts and ideas. And then he kind of loses the thread a little bit at the end because there are so many ideas going on in that movie. Here in Nope, which is his third film as writer-director, I thought all of the disparate elements, which feel kind of scattered at first, I feel like he really pulls them all together at the end. And the last, I don't know, 5 to 10 minutes of this movie, I think are pretty sensational. And the last couple images kind of deliver this, oh, I see what he was trying to do here. And I thought it was really exciting. In the middle, I feel it's maybe not muddled, that's the wrong word, but maybe a little bit long in the tooth. There are some detours that this movie takes that I think some people aren't going to care for. You mentioned the killer chimp, which was maybe my favorite part of the whole movie. I thought it was so strange and funny and unsettling, and yet tied into the sort of the running theme here of people trying to, or humans really trying to tame predators. There's also kind of this idea of exploitation and sensationalism in the entertainment industry. And the Steven Yeun character is kind of trying to take this UFO, maybe it is, maybe it isn't, thing in the sky and use it for his own purposes in a way that he does not go the way that he, or maybe even we expect. So yeah, I mean, Peele is, he was a comedian first. And so his transition to horror has been such a fascinating one. Although all three of his movies, and this one even, I think more than the other two, have dark comedy running through them. But I think he's an ideas filmmaker. He comes up with these big ideas, both abstract and literal, and I imagine him coming up with stories and he thinks of images first, which I think is kind of what Spielberg did too. And I also want to talk about the Spielberg parallels here, maybe in the rest of our discussion here. And sometimes I think he has too many ideas. Here, I think there's maybe one or two things kind of floating around here, no pun intended, floating around in Nope, that maybe could have been cut. But I just appreciated the fact that this is a big budget, major studio genre film that is so unexpected and so weird, even though it, you know, references things that already exist. So I had a terrific time at this, and it's over 2 hours, but I thought it just raced by. So yeah, I really liked Nope. I actually think I liked this more than his last movie.
I too like this more than Us. I wanted to talk just a little bit about the performances because of course, you know, that's what, you know, makes this movie go ultimately. I mean, against the backdrop of these big ideas, if you didn't have performers who were able to play their parts appropriately. And we find out that our primary protagonist, his name is OJ. And the thing is, the first time he says it, you know, people sort of just look at him and then you just sort of move on, you know? So it's Otis Jr., but you just sort of move on from that point.
And the people who look at him are mostly white. So there is that racial component
correct.
Throughout all of Peele's movies.
Right. And then his sister comes on the scene, Emerald, and we don't know what to make of her exactly because, you know, she's been a little bit removed from the family business, which is Hayward's Hollywood Horses. And she comes back on the scene as sort of like a pitch person for what they're able to do. And we're not sure that they can deliver anything that they promised, but both of the, I mean, they don't really look necessarily like brother and sister, but their camaraderie and their sort of course of dealing with one another feels really authentic. And then we have the guy from the Angel who comes to help them set up this surveillance system. And he is a character as well. And I mean that in all senses. And I was less familiar with Kiki Palmer's work because I think she's been largely doing television and those related things, but I loved her. I thought she was great. And I think that again, because we're trying to deal with all of these different things that are happening, I wasn't scared. I did not find this movie to be frightening in any way. And that's what I expected. I thought it was going to be more of a horror film. And maybe that's a commentary on me and my sensibilities that I wasn't scared at any point. So it's not the typical, and maybe because it's working off of these larger themes, it's not the typical things jumping out at you from, you know, the closet or whatever type of movie.
Yeah. Well, unlike MP, I was a little bit scared is not the right word, but I was on the edge of my seat throughout the first half of the movie. And then when I figured out what was going on, then I wasn't. But it is a suspenseful film. You know, one thing I wanted to address about what you were talking about, Nathan, you're right. The writer-director, Peele, in the movie Nope, he throws everything in there. And I read an interesting essay in Time magazine that was trying to talk about all these different things. And is it a comment on the making of Hollywood? Is it a comment on surveillance? Is it a comment in racial politics? It's all these things. And it's none of them at the same time. It is so easy to overthink what's going on here. I think Nope is best enjoyed by just sitting back and going, wow, there is so much going on here. And some of it is just so off the wall and weird. I could talk about for the next week. It's one of those movies when, you know, you're in your 20s, that, you know, after you go to the movie, you go drink beers and you talk about it for hours because there's so many ways to break it down.
Yeah, and I think the appeal of Peele as a filmmaker is the appeal is all of those things, and it kind of goes back to what I said that he's an ideas filmmaker. I also want to second the Kiki Palmer love because she has she pops up in like my social media feed every once in a while because she gives a wild interview, and I just think she's a star. I hope she is in so many more things. But going back to the Spielberg comparison in talking about Nope. This movie does, I don't think it's as good as any of these movies, but it does what golden age Spielberg did. So in Jaws, in especially in Close Encounters and Poltergeist, and even E.T., he grounds us in a real place with real people. We understand who these people are, what their relationships are, and what their jobs are. We get the milieu before we get the threat, even though there is sort of a cold open in this movie that I think is really also unsettling, where these things are falling out of the sky. So he grounds us in a certain kind of reality and the personalities of these people and their senses of humor. And then he introduces the threat, the monster, the creature. And so we believe it more because we believe the people. So he has clearly studied all of those great Spielberg movies and has taken notes, as Shyamalan did before him.
Yeah.
And I think people should definitely try to see this on the big
screen. Oh, big screen. Definitely. Saw it in Dolby. Yes,
absolutely. IMAX or Dolby, yes.
Right. Well, we're going to have to go here, but I need to give a shout out to Daniel Kaluuya, who nobody does a better slow burn on screen than this guy. I mean, there were some scenes in which just his expressions just said everything you needed to know about what was going on. At any rate, that was our discussion of Nope. This is Movies 101. It's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to look at Official Competition and The Gray Man. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
Subscribe to your favorite public radio programs when you become a Spokane Public Radio sustainer, just like any news or entertainment service you use. But unlike those other services, you decide how much you want to pay. Set up an electronic funds transfer, and monthly installments will be withdrawn automatically from your account. Plus, you can start or stop your subscription anytime you want. As a sustainer, you help make your public radio station strong. You support your favorite programs, and you never have to wonder when to renew. You're part of the community that sustains public radio. Call 509-328-5729 during business hours or go online to SpokanePublicRadio.org. Click the red donate button and start the process. Working together, we make our community a better place to work, play, and listen.
And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed Jordan Peele's movie, Nope. Let's move now to Official Competition and then The Gray Man. Many movies have been made about the making of movies. Think of Singin' in the Rain. Think of 8½. Think of Boogie Nights. Official Competition, written and directed by Mariano Cohen and Gaston Duprat, follows in that format. Just turned 80 and worried about his legacy, a millionaire industrialist played by Jose Luis Gomez decides to bankroll a movie. He buys a novel he hasn't read from a Nobel Prize winning author, hires a hot new filmmaker played by Penelope Cruz to direct, and she casts two actors of diametrically opposed styles and backgrounds. One is a popular movie star played by Antonio Banderas, and the other a stage thespian and well-regarded acting teacher played by Oscar Martinez. The result is a study of narcissism, egotistical posturing, and personal conflict, all tied to the creation of quote-unquote art. As I say, many movies have been made about the making of movies. Few, however, are more damning of the process than Official Competition.
I would agree, and I really enjoyed this movie. I mean, it's a little bit of a one-trick pony in some respects because, you know, there's this tension between the two stars and we don't know how it's going to resolve itself and, you know, so forth. But at the same time, Penelope Cruz, when she appears on the screen for the first time, she has this mop of like artificially colored red hair. And you're just wondering to yourself, okay, here's one of the world's most beautiful women. Where are we going to go with this? I mean, what's going to happen next? And you sort of vacillate back and forth between thinking that she is the world's most inspired filmmaker and that she's completely off her rocker, basically. And so I liked that, you know, taking this beautiful woman who we're accustomed to seeing in all these starring roles and sort of putting her in the director's chair, you know, as a character in this film and sort of watching her not really laugh at herself because she doesn't do that exactly, but she doesn't take herself too seriously either until she does. But it really is the tension and the course of dealing between the two actors that makes this work. And honestly, I have never thought that Antonio Banderas was better than he was in this film, because you sense maybe he's playing true to type in some ways, but Official Competition, and even the title is sort of sardonic in many ways, allows these actors, Oscar Martinez, who is an award-winning actor himself, is a little bit less recognizable maybe to some audiences, but he plays his part to a T as well. The only problem I had is at one point you do kind of figure out where this is going to go. And I was hoping it would take another twist or something, just maybe to surprise me, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you called it a one-trick pony, and that might be maybe a little harsh, because I mostly enjoyed this, and it has some genuine laughs in it, not only in the, you know, kind of oil and water temperaments of these people, especially the two actors, but just the bizarre things that Penelope Cruz, the director, is making them do, and then actually getting good performances out of them. So you're thinking, well, maybe her methods aren't madness after all. But I mean, we've seen Hollywood, and I'm putting that in quotes because this is mostly, you know, making fun of the Spanish film industry, but Penelope Cruz and Antonio Banderas were Hollywood stars at some point. We've seen Hollywood kid itself before and make fun of sort of the eccentricity of making movies. And I don't really feel like this went anywhere new, but what I appreciated about it was that the satire does get pretty vicious in a way that I wasn't quite expecting. There's a moment where Penelope Cruz brings a big like metal thresher out on a stage and then wraps Oscar Martinez and Antonio Banderas in like saran wrap and makes them watch as she drops all of their prizes into this metal, the acting prizes they won, into this thresher. But she leaves the Golden Globes because I don't think anybody would care that their Golden Globes got trashed. So that was a funny joke. But yeah, I also wish that it had like one more twist, but it goes to some dark places, and I appreciated that about it.
And that was Official Competition. Let's close with The Gray Man. As more than one critic has noted, there are only so many original plot lines for authors, playwrights, and filmmakers to follow. The main problem with The Gray Man, the Netflix adaptation of the 2009 novel by Mark Graney, as directed by Anthony and Joe Russo, is that it feels like a pale version of the Jason Bourne series, which the late novelist Robert Ludlum originated in 1980, and which were adapted as a film series beginning in 2002. Like Bourne, a government operative, played by Ryan Gosling, is part of an assassin team known under the code name of Sierra. Gosling's character, known only as Sierra 6, is tasked with killing a target in Bangkok. He hesitates as he doesn't want to endanger bystanders, and when he finally succeeds, he discovers that he's being set up. Turns out his boss Carmichael, played by former Bridgerton star Regé John Page, is both trying to rid himself of all Sierra members and cover up his own unsavory activities. What follows is Six trying to avoid the teams of killers sent to eliminate him, led by the sociopathic freelancer Lloyd Hansen, played against type by former Captain America Chris Evans, while trying to save his own former boss, played by Billy Bob Thornton, and his daughter, played by Julia Butters. The end game here? Nothing the Russo brothers put on screen, either regarding plot or action sequences, matches what directors such as Doug Liman and Paul Greengrass did with the Bourne series that Ludlum dreamed up four decades ago.
Well, I was also thinking of the John Wick movies, which I think this is also trying to be, and not being as good as any of those as well. I was watching this movie, The Gray Man, which is, the plot kind of describes the movie, I feel like. And I was having flashbacks to another Netflix thriller that came out like right at the beginning of the pandemic, like in April 2020. And I could not remember what it was. And it was almost distracting me from the movie. And it was another kind of globe-trotting espionage spy movie that also had like one really good action sequence in the middle and then nothing else around it was memorable, which is the same of The Gray Man. There's kind of like a shootout, big set piece in the middle that's pretty okay. And then everything else is, you know, you can write it off. And I had to look it up. It was a movie called Extraction with Chris Hemsworth. And it was written by the Russo brothers based on a graphic novel. And I'd totally forgotten about it, but this movie brought back horrible flashbacks. And yeah, this movie isn't bad. It's just whatever, you know? You mentioned other films that do the same thing better. I'm sure we could name others if we wanted to spend more time on this. Ryan Gosling's fine. I liked Chris Evans, you know, playing a villain. The only other time we've seen him do something like this is maybe Knives Out. And I kind of like him as this smarmy kind of prep school villain. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't even know if it matters what we think, because this was a $200 million production. It has nothing noteworthy about it. It's already been greenlit for a sequel. They just announced it this week. So we're going to get Gray Man 2, 3, 4, whatever. And yeah, it's all part of the algorithm. And that's what this feels like.
I did want to give a shout out to some of the secondary actors, because you will recognize a number of them, like Alfre Woodard. And, you know, I think that there are other people from television. Also, Dan mentioned the daughter. She was actually the niece of Billy Bob Thornton. I think people will recognize her. And I think that they do add something to this presentation. I guess my question about this is, this had the makings potentially of a summer Hollywood blockbuster film. And so I'm just trying to figure out what Netflix strategy is by releasing this on the small screen, because this is not, you know, I mean, I don't think it matters so much with this movie, but honestly, this is definitely not something that you would want to see on your computer.
Well, here's the thing, they're saying this is a hit for them as far as streaming numbers are concerned. If this movie was released in a theater, I don't know if we would be getting a sequel. I don't know if people would have shown up to see The Gray Man, you know.
I think it did get a limited release, because Mick LaSalle of the San Francisco Chronicle was telling people, don't go to the theater, see it on Netflix. So he apparently did see it in a theater, but who knows, you know. But I think I absolutely agree with you, Nathan. And I'll go back to, you know, if you want to see a movie like this, go back and see the original Bourne movies. Matt Damon, again, at that point, cast against type, he was really good as the Jason Bourne character. And Greengrass and Lyman did wonders with those really kind of stupid stories. At any rate, that was our discussion of The Gray Man. This is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and early in the show, Nathan Weinbinder, Mary Pat Truthart, and I discussed Jordan Peele's Nope and the Spanish language import official competition. Let's take this moment to thank Peter Glarberg for both producing and engineering the show, and we thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer, wherever we can find it. Until then, remember these words from the master of suspense, Alfred Hitchcock. There is no terror in the bang, only in the anticipation of it. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.